Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. This special edition celebrates Ohio Goes to the Movies, a signature event of America 250 Ohio, co-produced by John DeSando and Mary Urena, and hosted by Mary Urena. This podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
It is always good to be ranked in the top 10. I'm your host, Mary Urena.
And I'm Kimber Perfect.
And this is Double Take. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mary.
Happy to be celebrating Ohio Goes to the Movies with you. And you were an enthusiastic acceptance of my invitation because I had a film on the list that you love. Tell us about It Happened One Night.
Oh, It Happened One Night, a Frank Capra film from 1934. This film has always been among my top five favorite classic movies. But I will tell you, and I've seen it many times over the years, but not for a while until I saw it the other day. And I can tell you, this rom-com holds after nearly 100 years. I'm a rom-com fan, and this has to be, if not the first romantic comedy made in film, certainly among the first. But I will tell you, it holds today. I would hold it up to When Harry Met Sally, Notting Hill, any of them.
I would agree. And I chose this film because of the Ohio connection to Clark Gable, who was born and raised here. But it's a film that I love so much that I actually bought the DVD.
Oh my goodness.
And so I still had it. I still have a DVD player, so I can watch it whenever I want. But the thing that I found fascinating about watching it again to have this conversation with you is I really focused on how the film was crafted. We're in the early age of talkies. Films are still in black and white. This was made during the studio system where they had actors under contract. Actors were making sometimes up to 10 films a year because of the turnaround time. In this case, for this film, was 4 weeks. So it's really shot scene to scene to scene to scene. And I noticed the fade in and fade out, black and white. So we really don't have a lot of movement other than the one scene where Claudette Colbert as Ellie Andrews is walking through the camp
to the showers.
And that's really the only movement scene we have in the whole film. But Ellie is a runaway bride, if you will. She's the daughter of a tycoon banker. And she's
great in the film, by the way.
Yes.
The father.
Yes. Walter Donnelly, who we'll talk about a little bit later as well. So she has married somebody that he does not approve of. And he's trying to convince her to annul the marriage. She escapes from him and is trying to make her way to New York to reunite with her now husband, King Wesley. Traditional tropes that we think of now for the screwball comedy really develop through her character and the character of Clark Gable, Peter Warren. When they come together, he recognizes who she is and agrees to help her get to New York for an exclusive story because he's a newspaper man. So what were your thoughts when you first saw Clark Gable on Enter the Story as Peter Warren?
So in classic rom-com style, they start off intensely disliking each other. What romantic comedy, or screwball comedy for that matter, doesn't start off that way? I think one of the early lines of When Harry Met Sally, Sally says, "The first time I met Harry, you know, I couldn't stand him," or something like that. So anyway, they have this not necessarily acute meet because they intensely dislike one another. He doesn't recognize her right away. Remember, this is 1934. The newspapers with her photo plastered all over it probably hadn't been printed yet. But when he does, and that's early on in the film, he right away
kind of does the right thing. He's a gentleman, even though he can be a real jerk and towards her and kind of nasty at times. And in part, I saw that develop more so. I think the more he fell for her, the more annoyed he got with the whole situation because he was falling in love with her but knew that this was out of his reach. At least that's what I read in between the lines. But yeah, so then he strikes a deal with her rather than keeping it a secret that he knows to hold out for that $10,000 reward. And I liked how he approached it with her. They became partners in this effort.
Right.
He was going to help her get back to King, and he was going to get the award. So, and a scoop. He actually, more than the money, he really cared about the scoop.
Right. He's a journalist who, we meet him, he's on the phone with his editor, and his editor has basically fired him. But his, I guess, peers surrounding him fall for the fact that even though the editors has hung up on him, Peter basically turns the tables and says, I quit. He's lauded by his peers as he walks to the night bus to New York. So it's a funny start to the film. And I will say, even though I think it holds true today, there are parts of the film in terms of how nasty he can be towards her that maybe don't feel as comfortable, but in the context of a screwball comedy or a rom-com, they all work because he is getting more frustrated as he falls in love with her. I totally agree with that. But I think he also starts to realize that there's more to her than just the stereotype that he has, that she's this spoiled, rich brat. And she actually makes the case that she really isn't a brat because she never gets her way and that she's been in this controlled environment her entire life. She really wants to break out of it and live life. And one of the first scenes we see where she relaxes as they're on this long bus journey together is, as was typical at the time, that's how you traveled. People started singing songs and sing The Man on the Flying Trapeze. And she starts really enjoying herself, probably for the first time since we've seen the film. He does come to her rescue because she's not familiar with the ways of the world because she has been sheltered. She expects the bus driver to wait for her. And luckily, he waits for her to help her, and they have to catch the next bus.
Yeah, because she left her ticket.
And she left her ticket, exactly, yeah. On the
there
seat.
There had to be a ruse for him to have waited.
You know, that's true. Not just out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah.
He had to wait.
But that was also at the same time he realizes who she is because he sees the paper.
Exactly. And then there's also a couple of famous scenes where he's teaching her the ways of the world. And there are two I'm going to cite, which I'm sure will pop to your mind, if not our audience's mind, is the famous teaching her how to dunk a donut.
Oh, yes.
And the how do you hitchhike scene. So tell us a little bit about those scenes.
They have shared the, you know, first infamous motel room at an auto park, I think they call them in the movie.
Park, yeah.
He's strung up the rope and the blanket and all of that.
The Walls of Jericho.
The Walls of Jericho, yes. And which very famous, two very famous scenes from this movie, The Walls of Jericho and the hitchhiking scene. So Mary's brought up both of them. So he goes out and gets breakfast, one egg for her, one egg for him. And there's this little kitchenette in this motel room. So he comes in, what, you're not up yet? And so he starts readying and getting breakfast together, and he's got donuts. Now there's a plate of four donuts on the table first, but when they sit down to eat, there's only two. I noticed that. In
good
the movie.
Editing catch.
I know.
That continuity
issue. I could have
been
a movie editor. But there are just two. They each, because he's rationing out, they have very little funds. And he sees her dunk like half of the donut into her coffee.
And leaves it there.
Yeah.
Like leaves
it
soaking.
And he just says, that's no way. So he's kind of, it's an example of him teaching her the ways of the real world. So then she breaks off that half. And he shows her how to do it with the quick dunk. And she breaks off the soggy half and just dunks the one real quickly. And then they move on because the bus is leaving. Mm-hmm. And then later in the film, when they're hitchhiking, and there's a whole series of things that happen, how they end up off the bus, but he's bragging. This is when he's really starting to fall for her, and he wants to show her the kind of man he is. And he's got all these techniques for hitchhiking, and none of them work. And she's just laying on a fence post. My gosh. She goes, okay. So again, this is a woman. She didn't even know what hitchhiking was when he first brought it up. And so anyway, she goes out and sticks her leg out. A very famous, even if you haven't seen the movie, you have seen Claudette Colbert stick out her leg, pull up her skirt with her stocking feet and her high heels, and the car comes to a screeching halt for them.
Her own method. So interestingly, this was a film that had a hard time getting made at first. And we'll talk a little bit more about the casting. And we'll specifically talk about Clark Gable, Ohio's son. What would you recommend to our listeners with regards to It Happened One Night?
Well, if you don't have the CD, like Mary, I would pull it up on Amazon Prime. That's how I watched it. I'm telling you, this movie, I laughed throughout the movie. Now, I was put off by some of the gender-specific stuff. Her father slaps her like minutes into the film, and more than one occasion Clark Gable references punching her in the face. I mean, he doesn't actually ever hit her, but those kinds of things really rubbed me the wrong way. But other than that, it's an absolutely delightful film. The acting is superb. Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable together in this movie is amazing. And you're right about the cinematography, because Frank Capra really focuses in on the two principals, but there's all this stuff happening in the background, in the bus depot, you know, in at the camp, as you say, going to the showers. And there's just this activity, and I love the breaking out in song. And that on the bus wasn't the only time we had that breaking out in song. My mother used to tell me, my mother was born in 1927, and she used to say when she was growing up in the 30s and 40s that men and women would just walk down the streets of downtown Columbus and sing. They would just break out into song and sometimes even dance. And my mother was a dancer. The flying trapeze song and the driver breaking out into song as he was driving them down the road before he ran off with their suitcase. He just reminded me of my mother, which was a pleasant thing as well.
Aww. So, Kim, we're talking about It Happened One Night as part of our Ohio Goes to the Movies, celebrating America at 250 Ohio. Very famously, son of Ohio, Clark Gable. Mm-hmm. He was born in Ohio in 1901. Really wasn't classically trained as an actor. Mm-hmm. Had a little bit of a hard scrabble life. His mother died when he was 10 months old. His father remarried 2 years later. And his stepmother, I think, was really instrumental in his love of the arts, because she played piano. She taught him how to play piano. She also encouraged him when he became interested in brass instruments to play in bands. His father worked in the oil industry and then relocated to Akron, of all places, to try his hand at farming. And for a while, Clark worked with him on the farm, but decided that that was not for him. And he ended up working for Firestone Tire and Rubber Company. Mm-hmm. His stepmother passes away. And so his father relocates to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he starts working in the oil industry again. And for a while, that's what Clark did. He worked with his dad as a wildcatter and a sludge remover, which when I think of him as an actor, I'm not sure I can really picture him doing that. But he was a hard worker and didn't go through the classical education mm-hmm. that we talked about Paul Newman last week in The Hustler, when Lisa Maggard joined me on the show, and he went through higher education and got mm-hmm. his degree in drama. So the fact that he became an actor is pretty amazing, because mm-hmm. he decided at age 21, when he inherited the $300 from his mother's family trust, that he would leave Tulsa and go to the Pacific Northwest. And he really learned to act by auditioning, finally getting picked up and getting trained by multiple people because of his abilities improving. So he goes to Hollywood in 1924. He has minimal success. Mm-hmm. And then he returns to the stage and actually makes his Broadway debut to good reviews in 1928. I had no idea mm-hmm. that he even made it to Broadway. And that because of talkies, they were looking for actors in the studio system, which I'm sure you're familiar with how that worked.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of film stars from the silent movies didn't make it in the talkies.
Right. And they needed actors who were trained to talk on stage. Claudette mm-hmm. Colbert was very much a stage actress and was brought to Hollywood because of her ability to speak. So he returns to Hollywood in 1930. He actually finally has success, is signed by Warner Brothers, and subsequently signed by MGM, which brings us to his stardom, It Happened One Night. Now, I mentioned earlier that It Happened One Night was a film that almost didn't happen. Are you familiar with the background of it?
I know that he was on loan to Columbia Pictures for it. He had a break or something. He was able to do it. All I know.
And he also apparently wanted more money out of Louis B. Mayer. Mm-hmm. And so Louis wasn't casting him in anything. So to punish him, so at the time Clark Gable was making $2,000 a week, which would be righteous bucks today,
right,
I think.
Right.
But he wanted more money because he became known as the King of Hollywood because almost every film he made was making money and was profitable to the studio. So he wanted more of the cut of the pie. And Louis B. Mayer didn't want to give him a higher salary, so he loans him out to Columbia, which was considered a lesser studio, for $2,500. So Columbia had to pay MGM $2,500 to have Clark Gable, who was only making $2,000. So Louis B. Mayer was making $500 a week more profit because he loaned Clark Gable out as a punishment. But the joke ultimately ended up being on him.
Exactly.
Are you familiar with the awards that this...
Yes, first received? Film to win the top five categories in the Academy Awards. Best film, best director, best actor, best actress, and best adapted screenplay.
Yes, and it has been joined since by One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Silence of the Lambs. But it's only happened three times, and this was the first. Interestingly, no one wanted to make this film. Mm-hmm. It was based on an article or a short story called Night Bus, written by Samuel Hopkins Adams and appeared in 1933 in Cosmopolitan magazine.
Hmm. Interesting.
Frank Capra read it. He liked it. He asked Columbia to buy the rights for it. And it kind of sat for a little bit until they found the right time to make the film. Robert Riskin was Frank Capra's partner, and he rewrote the screenplay, the story for the screenplay. They changed the characters. Originally, Peter Warren was a painter, a struggling artist. Mm. They decided to make him a journalist. Ellen Andrews, as a character, was a little more shrill and probably a little more bratty, and they wanted to make her more sympathetic to make it believable that these two people would really fall in love together. But they went through several actors and actresses, and it reminded me of the famous Humphrey Bogart was not the original choice to play Rick in Casablanca, nor was Clark Gable the original choice to play Peter Warren, and nor was Claudette Colbert the original choice to play Ellie Andrews. But that cinema magic works.
Oh my gosh.
Can you talk a little bit about their chemistry on screen?
Yeah, so they definitely had amazing chemistry. Watching Clark Gable in this film, I felt like for most of the film, he's really playing himself. He's such a charming man.
And Frank Capra actually says that in subsequent interviews.
But you see his acting ability in the couple times during the film where he has to role play when Ellen Andrews' father's detectives have tracked them down to this hotel room and they both play act. They pretend to be this married couple that's screaming at each other, having a big blowout fight. And he was so mean to her. And she's crying and combing her hair. And they just slipped into these new roles very seamlessly for the movie viewer. And then later he has to gear off that horrible Mr. Shapley. He pretends he's this big mobster. And oh my gosh, I believe that he was a mobster. He just slipped into that role playing very seamlessly in the film. But yeah, their chemistry was great. My favorite line is at the very end when he goes to see the father the day of her formal wedding to King, and the father keeps saying, "But do you love her?" And he doesn't answer him. "But do you love her?" And Clark just keeps storming towards the door. And then finally, like the fourth or fifth time, the father says, "But do you love her?" And Clark Gable says, "Yes, I love her, but don't hold that against me." And just the way he delivers that line, and it was great.
Claudette Colbert was actually on her way out of town for vacation when they finally came to her and asked her to play this role. And at the time, she was actually pulling more from Paramount than Clark Gable was.
Oh, I like that.
She was making, I think, $25,000 a picture. She was doing well for herself. Frank Capra and Robert Riskin went to her and begged her to do it. And she said, well, I'm leaving on vacation and I normally make $25,000. If I'll stay if you double it. And Columbia agreed.
Oh, my gosh.
And they also agreed to make it in 4 weeks because she's like, I'll delay my vacation 4 weeks and then I'm out of here. And when she finished filming and she was getting ready to leave town, she told her friends, I just finished making the worst film I've ever made.
Oh my goodness.
Now, one of the benefits of actually owning the DVD is there's an interview with Frank Capra Jr. about what he remembers about his father talking about this film. He actually remembered his dad talking specifically about agreeing to her terms and making the film in 4 weeks, which is why they didn't invest a lot in new sets or anything like that. The hotel room is used multiple times, even though they're supposed to be different hotel rooms and different buses. But he also talked about how this wasn't shot in sequence, which was very typical, and how actors don't always see and know like how it's all going to piece together and how it's all going to come together as a story. And when It Happened One Night came out, you already had them, Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert, as huge stars. But you also, they touched a nerve with the public. When it was released, it went to a few theaters in the bigger towns and didn't do well. But then they re-released it across the country, multiple theaters in smaller towns, and society at the time was still coming out of the throes of the Depression. Mm-hmm. And here you had this film that wasn't colossal, wasn't trying to, at the time talkies came out, things were like Cleopatra and 1,000 man armies and things like that. And this was very simple, very character driven, and it really struck a chord with the public and became one of the top grossing films of the year. As you said, it got Academy Award accolades. It was only nominated for 5 Academy Awards and won all 5. And it also became so popular that in 1939, the main actors, including Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert, reprised their roles in a radio version
of
It Happened One Night. It really captured the attention of and won the hearts of the country, which is makes it an even more
totally see why
fantastic film. Yeah. So I referred to Clark Gable as the King of Hollywood because of the financial success of all of his films. He did serve in the United States Air Force during World War II. Mm-hmm. Very proud of that. The other thing that I learned about him that really made me very proud to call him an Ohio son is when he started filming in 1939, Gone with the Wind, which is one of his most famous films and famous performances, there was segregation on the set. Mm-hmm. And on the first day of shooting, he said he would not continue to the director, David O. Selznick, unless the segregation disappeared. Mm-hmm. They took the signs down and did not have a segregated set. And he was lifelong friends with Hattie McDaniel. I just was really proud to hear that about him.
I really, really loved hearing that. I actually did read that not too long ago. And I wish more people had the courage that he did. And that, you know, I mean, he stood his ground. He wasn't going to do it unless they took those signs down.
Yeah. So very proud of that. So before we finish, we should note that unfortunately we don't have a longer time with Clark Gable because he did die relatively young at age 59 of a heart attack just after finishing The Misfits, which ironically and sadly also was Marilyn Monroe's last film. But I did put together a list of essential films of Clark Gable. So for our audience, if they're not familiar with Clark Gable, these are 6 films that you would appreciate his entire body of work. We've already talked about what I would consider his number one film, It Happened One Night in 1934. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Gone with the Wind in 1939. Some other films that our audience might not be familiar with would be Red Dust, which was made in 1932. And it was before the production codes known as the Hays Code, went into full effect and really positioned Clark Gable for becoming the pre-code romance king. So he plays a rough around the edges rubber plantation overseer in Indochina, caught in a sizzling love triangle between a hardened woman of the world, Jean Harlow, and a refined newlywed, Mary Astor. He also went on, after It Happened One Night, to play in Mutiny on the Bounty opposite Charles Laughton. Gable plays Fletcher Christian and garnered his second nomination for Best Actor at the Academy Awards in 1935. So the final two films I'd recommend would be one, The Misfits, his final film, which was released in 1961. It's a poignant, melancholy Western where he shines as Gay Langland, an aging independent cowboy who, alongside with a disillusioned divorcee, struggles to survive in a modernizing and changing Nevada. And then in Run Silent, Run Deep from 1958, he demonstrates his dramatic range in a taut World War II submarine thriller, and he stars opposite Burt Lancaster. Did I miss any Clark Gable films that you would consider to be essential?
No, I have a couple more to add to my list now.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. Good. And just a one final side note, and I told you I had a little surprise of another Ohio connection to this film. The wonderful actor Walter Connolly plays Alexander Andrews, Ellie's father.
Yes.
He was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Nice.
He's also buried in Cincinnati, Ohio, and was an alumnus of St. Xavier College and the College of Music of Cincinnati. So we would be remiss if we did not mention the wonderful Walter Connolly as another Ohio connection to It Happened One Night.
And I think he had a blast making this film.
Oh, he's very funny, very charming. It has some of the best lines, especially at the end where he says, "Let them tumble, the walls of Jericho." So thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Mary, for having me. This was fun.
And I encourage our audience to have another film festival featuring Clark Gable.